KLYT Broadcast Studios. This is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
ABQ Connect is sponsored in part by Bosque Home Services, heating, cooling, plumbing, roofing, and restoration services. 505-444-7200. That's 505-444-7200. Or on the web at HVACAlbuquerqueNM.com. Bosque Home Services, locally grown, locally owned. Thank you for your support of KLYT and our show, ABQ Connect. Welcome to ABQ Connect. Paul Gessing, the president of the Rio Grande Foundation in studio. Hi, Paul.
Hey, good to be here, Jim.
Now, have you trained me or have I trained you? Our show notes now you send me, they have bibliographical information, connections to Heirs of Enchantment or the RioGrandeFoundation.org, and I just have to cut and paste and do nothing, Paul, so thanks.
Well, it's not my first rodeo on the radio, so to speak, and it's also something that I've grown very used to doing because we have so much to talk about, and I just have limited amount of time to talk about it and got to get all this information out there.
The fun thing for our listeners that can't see Paul in action, and he does have a podcast. Tell us where people can reach that podcast, Paul.
Yeah, tippingpointsnm.com. Just as an FYI, we've sat down so far with two of the declared gubernatorial candidates for the Republican Party to challenge Michelle Lujan Grisham next fall. And we've got two of the others, Karen Bedoni and Rebecca Dow, coming up soon. So just of one of many things that we're working on at the foundation and the podcast and getting interviews with all those candidates running for governor.
What I started to say is Paul has his MacBook here on the table, and mm-hmm. we have a note. We have notes, 8, 9, 10 things we're going to talk about today. But with Paul, everything changes by the minute. Paul's getting emails and new topics and all kinds of things literally happening minute by minute. And that's why we appreciate his visiting us so much, because he gives us a clear and concise overview of politics and issues going on in the state of New Mexico. Hey, let's start with Kids Count. The Annie E. Casey Foundation puts this out annually. It has data about child poverty, education, safety in states for children, and so forth. So the Kids Count data, you believe, is pretty sound,
mm-hmm.
but you say the spin is not.
Yeah, and again, this is a joint project by an organization that we are not affiliated with. Voices for Children is actually on the opposite side of the political spectrum and political debates from Rio Grande Foundation, which isn't to say that that's always the case with even far-left progressives. But when you talk about issues, for example, like corporate welfare, the film industry, the film subsidies, a principled liberal, principled progressive would generally be on our side on those issues, because corporate welfare benefits the very wealthiest people. But when we work on those issues, we never get support from folks at Voices for Children. And interestingly enough, as kind of an aside issue relating to what we're talking about with them, is they have among their 16 variables in their report, the number of children in single parent families is one of their 16 data points that contributes to Kids Count, making it an excellent report. Now, I told some people at a meeting this morning, you'd have to look long and hard at the Voices for Children website to see them talking about marriage and traditional families and having two parents in the home. They pick and choose their approach to how they report this data. Doesn't mean the report's bad, but it does mean that they really take a cherry picking approach to a lot of what they do with the report, and this is actually detrimental to, I think, the political debate and discussion here in our state, and the approach that we have to making conditions better for all of our children. I went back and I looked at this report, because it's been done every year for a long time. I looked at the last decade. I found all of their reports and ratings over the last decade.
By the way, if any of our listeners go to Annie E. Casey Foundation, you can look at Kids Count 2020, Kids Count 2021. You can actually download the whole report as a PDF, and you can read it.
Yeah.
And New Mexico does not fare well literally in any category.
Yes, especially education, but normally there's four categories. There's economic well-being, education, health, and family and community. Again, we don't have really any serious quibbles with the overall report, but it's the interpretation that we have some issues with. Now, in 2012, New Mexico ranked overall 49th. In 2013, we were 50th. 2014, 49th. 15, we're 49th. 16, 49th. 2017, 49th. 2018, 50th. 2019, 50th. 2020, we were 50th, and then 2021, which just came out, we were 49th. So very, very little change. And while a good report, you know, when you talk about comparing states versus other states, you know, a little bit, there's going to be a little bit of noise there to an extent. So let me read you these quotes. This is from 2019 when James Jimenez, the head of Voices for Children in the last year of the Martinez administration, said, fundamentally, the story the data tells is that there was a real failure by the Martinez administration to invest in youth, children, and families in a way that made much of a difference in terms of these kinds of rankings. So, of course, this is Susana Martinez, bad. Of course, she's a Republican. That goes without saying. But 2021, we just jumped all the way up one spot from 50th to 49th. Emily Wildow of Voices for Children, and this is available at Heirs of Enchantment. You can go back and verify for yourself. Her quote is, pre-pandemic improvements in child well-being are a glimpse of what investments can do for children. Now, just a little bit of spin going on there. Now, of course, 50th and 49th is really next to trivial. Secondly, this is prior to COVID-19 when our governor locked our kids out of classrooms for over a year. We had serious issues across the board in terms of lost classroom time, lost academic performance, not to mention the, you know, suicide and all the potential issues that all of our children dealt with. But, you know, this was the only year pre-pandemic, and now moving forward will be 2020 data and 2021 data that will, presumably, hopefully, because some of this stuff, you know, and this is one of the problems with studies like this is, if you don't do the standardized tests, you don't have all of the information, what does it mean? You're going to have some, I would expect some wild differences in the data. But the point is, that, you know, accusing a governor of one party with underinvestment and then going in with a mild bit of increase and improvement, saying the other governor's doing, you know, all these great things. And the reality is, and this is the kicker, Jim, you ever watch the, Saturday morning cartoons where they had the, how's the bill passed, you know, Schoolhouse Rock and all that stuff? Mm-hmm. Well, our government here in New Mexico is very similar to the government in Washington, D.C. Governors, with the exception of COVID-19 in the last year and a half, are not dictators. The legislature actually passes the laws that impact all of us in these various issue areas. So if you want to blame somebody, and you can, I think, lay a lot of the blame at the feet of one particular body of people, not one person, but one body of people, you've got to look at the legislature. And that is where the attention needs to be focused in terms of why is New Mexico not 50 to 49 to 49 to 50, any given governor. It's, we are consistently at the bottom because of the poor policies out of Santa Fe coming down from the legislature. So there, I circled it all around, Jim. And, I'm not taking anybody's, moniker as the no spin zone, but we are going to cut through the spin that some of these groups, even in an excellent report, try to, you know, say, oh, well, one politician and one party is doing everything right, and another is doing everything wrong. It's simply not the case.
I have to say that I'm so thankful that my children are grown. Now, the Gessing family has small children.
You are correct.
And so I am prayerful and literally asking God, take care of the guessing children and many other hundreds of families that I know that have small children. And Paul, here's the thing. I don't think we need to discuss Republican, Democrat. What we need to understand is one party has been in control the majority of the last 90 years. That's the Democrat Party. Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying anything bad about Democrats. I'm just saying here are the facts.
Mm-hmm.
You've led us into last or second to last in every major category, especially when it comes to focusing on our children. Why don't we change it now? Let's change it. Let's do the positive things. That's what I like about the Rio Grande Foundation, Paul. You look at best practices of other states.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I was reading an article. What was the state that you talked
Mississippi.
About? Mississippi. And Mississippi is one of those that has, they're trying to do something about it because they either rank right behind us or right ahead of us, right?
Yep. We often say around here, thank God for Mississippi. And, you know, depending on the measurements in the kids count index, Mississippi and New Mexico often trade that very last number, 49 or 50th, back and forth between the two of them. Now, I did a podcast recently, again, at tippingpointnm.com. We talked to one of the people from the state think tank in Mississippi about why they had success with turning around fourth grade reading scores in their state, which they have. It's undisputable. The test is called the NAEP, National Assessment of Educational Progress. It's not a state-administered test in the sense that it's different from state to state. This is coming from Washington, and one of the few things that the federal government does in well and that's useful in some areas is they have a test that's given to a statistically representative sample of children. It's not every kid in the state. So if your kid didn't take the NAEP, that's because they weren't selected for it. But that test illustrates very clearly what states are doing well and poorly on the issue of education. Now, you do it for 4th, 8th, 12th, and other grade levels. You do it all kinds of subject areas, science, reading, math. But for education reformers, going back as we brought this model to Susana Martinez when she was starting as governor of New Mexico, it was a model implemented in Florida successfully by then Governor Jeb Bush. And it's what Mississippi ultimately took to succeed. It involves things like investments in early childhood reading. Why? Because the idea is before fourth grade, kids are learning to read. And then in fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, and beyond, they're sitting in front of textbooks. And if they can't read the science problem or can't read the word problem in their math class or the social studies or God knows what other classes they're taking, they're on that dropout train heading to, you know, oblivion. And so that's why we, and that's why Governor Martinez focused so heavily on getting kids up to speed, investing real money in those early years in reading education, focusing on tactics that work like phonics-based reading learning and eliminating social promotion for kids that can't read because you can't just have a system that passes those kids along. The difference we found with Mississippi versus New Mexico is that the political will was there in Mississippi. They didn't have the unions pushing back so hard against the policies. They had a more willing infrastructure in place, and they've seen, you could get go in, again, errorsofenchantment.com. We provide a simple chart. Fourth grade reading scores on the NAEP going back to mid-2000. 2013, I think, is when it really starts to take off in Mississippi. And New Mexico just kind of flatline, just the same.
Yes,
so,
yes.
Yeah, so I we're focusing on that. You know, education is a multi-dimensional animal. You know, I know I'm a big fan of school choice and giving parents and families the ability to choose the school that makes sense for them. But you can have real impacts pretty close to right away in a system that exists and has its challenges and flaws. But, you know, just to top off that whole conversation, we have school board elections this fall.
Well, and we're going to talk in depth a little bit more about the school board. But I do want to make a comment about what you just talked about. The political response to this is, especially if you were to ask our incumbent governor, she would say, I'm all about what Paul Gesing just said because I've allocated over $300 million to early childhood education. Here's the part that bothers me. I'm right now on a website called NMECECD, Early Childhood Education and Care Department, that was formed after this money was allocated. The problem I have is the money was allocated by the New Mexico legislature without a plan. There is no plan. Now, they got a cool website. I'm reading it right now. There's programs for prenatal, programs for infants, programs for toddlers, programs for pre-K. I mean, I'm actually doing this while we're on the radio right now, and I'm looking at it, and I'm just going, there's nothing new in here.
Yeah.
There's just been a pile of money thrown at what I would say is doing the same thing we've been doing for the last 60 years.
Yeah, and that's the accountability angle. And we, as parents, as families, have limited ability to keep our education system accountable. You know, if you go to McDonald's and the nuggets are cold, the fries are soggy, the drink doesn't have the right amount of ice in it, you probably aren't going to go to that McDonald's or maybe any McDonald's again because you have the ability to do that. Why is choice in school and education so powerful? Because that choice keeps everybody accountable. Now, that's the best means of accountability. That's Paul's dream. Somewhere down the road, we can all use the resources available in the education sphere to actually help our kids learn in the best way that's available to them. Now, we have a system in place that takes the money, and that system doesn't have a lot of accountability. It's really tough to hold the schools accountable. So it sounds... accountability is a multi-dimensional term. It sounds great in a lot of ways. I think we all want accountability, but there is also the tough conversation that you might have with a principal or a teacher at a given school and say, you're not getting the job done for my kid. And I think that is tough and people don't want to necessarily face up to it. So the easy way is just bring school choice to everybody so that everybody gets what they want. Secondarily, there's, hey, your kid isn't learning in third grade. We can't shift them along to fourth grade because they don't know how to read yet, and that is going to cause serious ramifications for them in their future life experience, career options, all those kinds of things. And we have a system that isn't willing, as it stands now, to have those conversations.
Paul Gesing is the president of the Rio Grande Foundation. When we come back, we are going to talk about school choice, and we're going to talk about the school board election a little bit more in detail and talk about education. Going out of order on our list here a little bit, but since Paul brought it up, that's where we're going. We'll be back on ABQ Connect right after these messages.
Host of the Bible Answer Program, No Other Doctrine. We have a college to train you for ministry. You can train at ccfcollege.com, but every 2 years, I personally train up 50 men. It is low cost and only one night a week. It starts in August. Men, get more info at crossfellowship.org. That's crossfellowship.org or call 990-7588.
Calvary Christian School is now accepting kindergarten through second grade student applications for the fall 21-22 school year. With a strong Christ-based foundation, Calvary Christian School desires to partner with families to grow children in the love of Christ, mentally, physically, spiritually, and socially. The goal is for attendees to be the best taught and best loved students in Albuquerque. Handbook, calendar, and enrollment packet information are available at CalvaryChurchPreschool.com.
Way too fast. This is Roger Patterson with a minute of vision for life. I looked up the other day and saw my 6-year-old daughter swinging on the trapeze bar on the swing set. In an instant, the truth that I can't stop the hands of time hit me square between the eyes. She has grown so much lately, and before I know it, she'll be headed off to college. Trying to keep her at this age is like trying to grasp oil in the hand. After a moment, my thoughts of her growth were interrupted with the words, "Daddy, can you come get me?" After a chuckle, I said, "Absolutely," and got right up to her to get her down. I took her in my arms and asked her not to grow up. I said, "Would you stay this age forever?" She laughed and she said, "No, silly, my birthday's in April. You know, I can't control time, but I can strive to maximize the moments I've been given. This is a gift from God." Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verses 10 and 11 states, "I have seen the business that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. He's made everything beautiful in its time."
You've been listening to Dr. Roger Patterson with A Minute of Vision at visionforlife.org.
You're listening to KLYT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
We want to thank Ben Lucero and Indigo Mortgage for supporting the ministry of KLYT and ABQ Connect. Indigo Mortgage, 505-836-5700. That's 505-836-5700 or on the web at indigomortgage.net. Thank you, Indigo Mortgage, for your support of KLYT and ABQ Connect. If you are listening this afternoon, I hope you're one of those people that is really interested in finding out about the school board election. That's going to be held coming up in November, and this is when you have to start evaluating people that are running. What kind of questions should we be asking of these people, Paul?
Well, we've got a survey that we are putting out, and as you might imagine, you know, it's actually a short survey. We're sending it to all school board candidates, not just here in Albuquerque, but where there are elections across the state, we're sending them out. But for here in APS, we ask about splitting APS. And I think while there are pluses and minuses to splitting APS, I think that it is a important issue that needs to be fully fleshed out by the school board candidates. We ask about their masking requirements, positions. While the governor, unfortunately, in her reopening statement on July 1st, said that students, not just in public, but also in private schools, need to be masked if they're not vaccinated, which the vaccines are not approved for younger children. And I'm not going to get my kids, who are all under the age of vaccine approval, experimental vaccine, just so I can get them to be not in a mask. I will find alternative approaches there, I can assure you of that. But we also asked about critical race theory and the idea that our students should essentially be taught in school, or whether they should be taught in school, to hate America and to believe that essentially your race is your most defining characteristic as a human being. And those are dangerous things to be taught by an education system.
If you believe your race is the defining thing in your life, that's racist.
Yeah, I would say that, although I think a superiority impact on one side or the other. I mean, it's something that's pointless, but yeah, the idea that you're better than somebody else because of whatever race you are, you deserve special favors in this world, especially from governments because of your race. It's totally out of line. It doesn't need to be taught. You can teach America's warts and all history without diving into what critical race theory does, which is beyond anything that would be a genuine history of the United States. So it's a tough one because there's always this conflation among advocates for it, which are including the teachers' unions these days and some politicians who say, oh, it's just history. No, it is not just history. And I realize that how you address that is a difficult thing, but we want to ask the school board members, and we are asking the school board candidates what that position is to them.
Well, I think it's important that people understand that this information is provided by the RioGrandeFoundation.org. You are a bipartisan think tank. You're trying to help people address and think through these. Now, you do have a bias in that you're liberty-oriented. You don't want the rights of individuals to be taken away from them.
Mm-hmm.
And always, it would appear to me that every time somebody in the incumbent party offers to do something for somebody, they want a little bit more control of them. Is that a wrong impression?
Yeah. You know, people in government generally use their power, use control over resources to get votes. A lot of people really like those positions of power for that simple reason alone. So it's there's a certain element of using the resources to gain those votes. And of course, using the resources to tell you what those people in positions of power want you to believe. They want you to believe that government does a great job of managing the schools. They want you to believe certain things about history or current events or gender or abortion, all these kinds of things. Ultimately, this is one of, you know, the other issue with school choice. Obviously, we talk about the effectiveness and what the kids learn successfully or unsuccessfully and how the schooling can be tailored to them. But the other aspect of school choice is the messaging and physically what they are learning in the classroom and being able to choose that. And I am the product, as we've discussed on many past shows, of parochial schools, Catholic schools. My daughters, who previously had been in public school, were then homeschooled for the last year, and now two of the three of them will be at a Catholic school, and one of them will be in a charter school.
And I've heard their history teacher is exceptional.
He was the best ever. yeah, and you could ask the kids, and they probably would say the same. But you know, I have really bright kids to learn, and they were very engaging and a lot of fun to teach for the last year. And I really learned a lot. It's very disruptive. I wouldn't want to wish the last year on really anybody, but one of the silver linings, there always is a silver lining somewhere. One of the silver linings of the last year for our family was that we really got to understand in a candid way what the kids liked and disliked about their previous school and the ways that they learned and what their strengths and weaknesses are. And until you step foot in, quote, a classroom, whether that is a two-person classroom in the back of your house or whatever it is, you don't really understand the way your kid learns in a traditional schooling environment until you're engaged in that process on a day-to-day basis. And so it was great to learn what my kids' learning styles were, but also what drives them, what makes them interested in a particular topic.
I'm hoping that our listeners, and largely a faith-based audience, what I'm hoping they'll do is they'll go to riograndefoundation.org, among some of the other resources that we provide for them. They'll look up this information. They'll look at the philosophies being espoused. They will have discernment about whether it's deception or not. And then they will go to their Bible. For example, in Colossians 2:8, a guy named Paul wrote a letter to the people at Colossae, and he said, "See to it that no one takes you captive through philosophy and empty deception, according to the tradition of men, according to the elementary principles of the world, rather than according to Christ." Now, I get to say that on this show, Paul, because I want our folks to vote their Bible. I'm hoping that they will have that discernment, that they will balance whatever they read on the Rio Grande Foundation with what they read in the Word and what they read about critical race theory, and then they get to make a decision. And I believe that will be clear to them if they spend that time.
Well, you can't go wrong following someone named Paul. that Paul, of course, one of the greats and most influential people in the history of the world, certainly in Christianity. And we just try to shed some light on some public policy issues. He had a much bigger and much more influential role across the globe. So, yeah, it is... You know, we're not a biblically based organization. We're a liberty based organization. But if you believe that God's plan for you involves living your life to maximize your potential, not just for your own self and your own pleasure or affirmation, but also to benefit the other people around you and your family and your day to day life and your business and ultimately America and the world, if you believe all that to be true, which I certainly do, then yeah, this is the way to do that. Unlocking human potential is what I believe God wants for us, and it is clearly the way for us as individuals to benefit everybody around us much more than, you know, having somebody, some other flawed figure in government trying to micromanage your day-to-day life and your families and et cetera. It just doesn't work out well.
Paul, there was some data that showed that New Mexico, increased homeschooling more than most states. And I've read some statements by various people that said they have no plans to move their children back into public schools. They're going to continue with the homeschooling.
Yeah. And a lot of people, you know, especially on my Twitter feed, who are increasingly frustrated with what's being taught in the public schools. And I'll again say that we had some really great teachers at my kids' elementary school, Chaparral Elementary, right here in Albuquerque, an APS school. We did grow frustrated with the lack of, you know, essentially a school year over the last year, and that was really what broke the camel's back. So it is something that is factual, though, that a lot of people grew very tired of the way the school situation was managed, the uncertainty. I'm already getting trepidation about the masks in this school year coming up. So it certainly is not shocking that a lot of parents and a lot of families just opted out entirely, as we did at the beginning of the last school year, and just said, we're going to take this upon ourselves and come up with a better option for our kids. And so this website, and it's again posted at heirsofenchantment.com. It's The 74. It's an education oriented website. We got the data from them, and they found that New Mexico was a national leader in terms of the number of students going into homeschooling, leaving the public school system. And I do think that is a great option for a lot of people. If you have the wherewithal and the flexibility in your life to do it, by all means, do it. My kids are going back to school because we asked them what they wanted to do. And we believe in individual freedom to an extent for our children. And we asked them what they wanted to do next. And I just think they really missed being around other kids and whatnot. And I think based on our conversations, as I told you, in our homeschool classes, their biggest frustration with the schools, the public schools, was the interruptions from the misbehaving kids and the inability for the school system or the teachers to really deal with that effectively, and how much information they missed and how much time was wasted with the bad kids in the back, so to speak. I'm hoping that now in our new environments for the kids that they can overcome that. And hopefully you don't have that problem if you are homeschooling your kids. Hopefully there's not a kid passing notes to their brother, sister, or maybe even a pandemic pod or whoever. Hopefully you have that situation under control. But you got to be able to maintain the interest of your children in order to successfully educate them.
I can tell you this. We all need to be praying for the parents that have young children like the Guessing family. We'll be back with Paul Guessing after these messages. Stay with us on ABQ Connect.
Way too fast. This is Roger Patterson with a minute of vision for life. I looked up the other day and saw my 6-year-old daughter swinging on the trapeze bar on the swing set. In an instant, the truth that I can't stop the hands of time hit me square between the eyes. She has grown so much lately, and before I know it, she'll be headed off to college. Trying to keep her at this age is like trying to grasp oil in the hand. After a moment, my thoughts of her growth were interrupted with the words, "Daddy, can you come get me?" After a chuckle, I said, "Absolutely," and got right up to her to get her down. I took her in my arms and asked her not to grow up. I said, "Would you stay this age forever?" She laughed and she said, "No, silly, my birthday's in April." You know, I can't control time, but I can strive to maximize the moments I've been given. This is a gift from God. Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verses 10 and 11 states, "I have seen the business that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. He's made everything beautiful in its time."
You've been listening to Dr. Roger Patterson with A Minute of Vision at visionforlife.org.
Hi, I'm Johnny Erickson Tata, and when I played field hockey in high school, no matter how many times I got beat up on the field or how often I fell, if we were winning, I'd jump up and head back into the game with drive and energy. But if I took a lot of falls in a game in which we were losing, I felt like throwing in the towel. I mean, come on, after all, we've already lost, right? My attitude about hardship depended entirely on what the scoreboard looked like. And it's the same in life. Dealing with quadriplegia and pain and cancer, well, yep, those are some hard hits. But with Jesus, we know we're winning. And this is what shapes my attitude every day in this wheelchair. It's, come on, let's go. We can do this. Victory is within reach. Acts 14 says, we must go through many hardships to enter the kingdom of God. Whatever your hardships are, today it should be game on. After all, victory is on the horizon.
You're listening to KLYT,
Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Paul Gessing in studio this afternoon. Paul, you're going to have a vacation coming up, my friend.
I am, and it'll be the usual combination of fun, family obligations, and a little bit of learning. My wife has family back in the D.C. area, so we're wrapping up some loose ends relating to some things there. Then we are heading to Colonial Williamsburg, which I went to as a kid, probably 12, 13 years old, and is a fantastic thing to check out when you can get down to America's colonial capital. So while we were still under the British rule, but they've done a great job preserving it, have live history, dressed up people. If you ask them about the internet, or they will undoubtedly, if you get out your cell phone, they will make some comment about the, you know, what is that newfangled thing? Because they're literally actors trying to be in 1619 or whatever, 1620s, 1680s, whatever year they are in, they are trying to live that. And then we're going to do some beach time down in Virginia Beach on the East Coast. So it's a little bit of everything.
I mentioned at the top of the show that you often suggest alternatives to what we're doing now in New Mexico. And we've been discussing school choice and homeschooling as one of those options. But where school choice is really working, Paul, the states are allocating money to help parents finance school, like if they went to a private school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is a lot of different states that are really charging for it. I mentioned Florida earlier. They are one of the states that really has taken the bull by the horns, so to speak. They have different programs in place to put money in the hands of families that they can then choose the schooling. And Florida has, you know, Florida is a very diverse state. They've got a lot of poverty in certain areas of Florida. All across the board, though, Florida is a state that's succeeding. Mississippi, we talked about their accountability measures. And so it's not really so much just school choice, although they have some in Mississippi as well. But the state that I think shows New Mexico the way forward, because it is so similar to us, is Arizona. Arizona is right there as a national leader in education reform, school choice. You know, the thing is once you have the political will and the political calculation is made that school choice and putting more money in families' pockets and letting them choose how to find the education for them and their children, you come up with a ton of different results. And Florida and Arizona are two of the states that have really led the charge there. And again, Arizona is many, many ways just like New Mexico. We were joined, for Pete's sakes, as territories prior to U.S. statehood. You can find some funny maps out there. And even Las Vegas, Nevada used to be part of Arizona. And then you get the Gadsden Purchase. This was all fun parts of the Gessing homeschool curriculum. But there's a lot of states. And we work with one of many education reform organizations nationally called ED Choice. And as you might imagine, their focus is on educational choice. A gentleman named Jason Bedrick, B-E-D-R-I-C-K, has been tracking, because this has been an unprecedented year for school choice. So new school choice programs have cropped up in seven states: Arkansas, Indiana, Kentucky, Missouri, New Hampshire, Ohio, and West Virginia. You have expanded programs taking effect in Arizona, Arkansas, Florida, Georgia, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Maryland, Montana, Nevada, Ohio, Oklahoma, Pennsylvania, and South Dakota. So you have a cropping up of educational choice, because where the political will is there, you have politicians responding to parents and families saying, hey, look, this last year was a total disaster. Let's try something different. Unfortunately, as is so often the case, New Mexico is lagging dramatically behind, not just in the results, which we know about, but also in the means to move forward to change and improve those results for the kids that need it the most.
Paul, you're aware, for example, of charter schools under the direction of APS. And I don't know if the one I'm going to use as an example is an APS school or a state school, but Cottonwood Classical is a prime example. They've got graduation rates close to the private schools, Academy, Manal School, Hope Christian. they have very high graduation rates and GPAs and all of the good things, but they are a public school. Now, I don't know what the amount of money is, but per student, they get funded X number of dollars from the state, from the fund that funds education for the state of New Mexico. So does competition breed some of the accountability that you were talking about? If some of the private institutions start competing with the public schools, some of that funding gets taken away from them. Do you think that will improve the public schools?
Yeah, and charter schools are one of the things that New Mexico does relatively well. Not all states have charter schools, and New Mexico's had them for a long time. We need more. We need better laws on the books to encourage not just individual charter schools, but to encourage successful efforts like Cottonwood Classical to be deployed across the state. We have some quirks in our law because it's an old law that make it kind of their idea in education under New Mexico law is that you have one-off charter schools. It's not as easy to bring a new Cottonwood Classical online under the same management. You have to kind of start the whole thing from the beginning. And the process is not easy of applying for a charter school. There's all kinds of obstacles, and we could do a better job in New Mexico. But there are a lot of great charter schools out there, and they are a form of school choice. They are under government rules and regulations, and that is a limiting factor too. But I would also put out there Estancia Valley Classical Academy, which is out in Moriarty, as another charter school that does some amazing things. And there are plenty of excellent public schools that do well, but as we experienced ourselves, a lot of that really rises and falls with parental involvement, family involvement, and the quality of the principal and the teachers that are willing to work with that principal. And you're in a great school or have a great situation, and then suddenly the principal moves on, and the whole situation can collapse very quickly. So it's better to have a system in place that actually works. And yes, the competition and accountability are critical components.
Now, I know this is a controversial thing, so I'm just going to tell you.
We don't talk about controversial things on this show, Jim.
What I don't want to do is offend people. I just want to tell them things that I find to be interesting, and I don't expect everybody to agree with me. But I've been in some classrooms, particularly in Las Cruces, where there is bilingual education taking place, where you have second grade children speaking Spanish as well as they speak English. And to be honest, I met some second graders that are speaking French, Spanish, and English fluently. And I'm so amazed by that. I mean, they can read, write, think, dream in different languages. And I think to myself, what an imbecile I am, because I can barely speak English. I can say a few Spanish words to order food, but I'm embarrassed that I'm a native New Mexican and I can't speak Spanish, because just with a little application, I think that's an amazing thing. I also think that getting rid of music in the schools, I mean, I think the arts and all of those things are so essential to a well-rounded education. And of course, athletics, I believe in so wholeheartedly. So I'm hoping that New Mexico will start to look at the best practices and things that you bring out, the states and the resources that you've meant. We have all kinds of resources for you. When you go to the podcast at ABQ Connect, you'll see links to Eras of Enchantment and some of the other links to other information Paul gives you as you read through these articles. So you have a bibliography, if you will. You don't just have two guys sitting in a radio station telling everybody their opinion. There's actual data and actual facts that you can look at. So we hope that you will take this information, scrutinize it, have some fun with it. This is not laborious. This is actually really interesting stuff, and it can really do a lot to protect your kids. Paul Gessing is the president of the Rio Grande Foundation. When we come back, we're going to talk about some other interesting things. He's telling me here that Senator Heinrich is coming after our gas appliances. We'll mention that when we come back. Stay with us.
What do you do when you haven't got a prayer? Listen to this hotspot to find out.
Prayerlessness impoverishes us. I lose out on an opportunity to partner with God in the work He wants to do.
Skip Heitzig continues with this about the sin of prayerlessness.
Jesus said, you know this, ask and you shall receive. Seek and you shall, tell me, find. Knock and the door shall be opened unto you.
Lock into a motherload of messages by Skip at connectwithskip.com.
Far be it from me that I should sin against the Lord in ceasing to pray for you. What do you mean it robs others? Well, it robs people of the blessings God wants to give them, and that is the epitome of selfishness.
Finally, a strong call to action locks out this hotspot.
Prayer is action. It's the first action because we're engaging God in the process. You can always do more than pray after you've prayed, but you can never do more than pray until you pray.
Hotspot. The most important information anyone can receive comes from an understanding of the Bible. Only here do we find direct revelation about all things related to life and relationship with God. Life does not always provide us with time or opportunity to break away and study the Bible full time. That's why KLYT is dedicated to presenting round-the-clock teaching by some of the best communicators we can find about Scripture and how it relates to our lives. We need to be exposed to the full counsel of God's Word. KLYT presents the Bible School of the Air with a new time. Each Saturday, starting at 12, KLYT will present through the Bible verse-by-verse teachings by Chuck Smith, Skip Heitzig, and Chuck Missler, followed by a question-and-answer session with Scott Richards. We will continue rotating through the Old and New Testament. Drop into our Bible journey at any time and go through the entire Word of God with us. The KLYT Bible School of the Air. Tuition is free. The rewards are eternal. Saturdays at 12 on 88.3 FM.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Thank you to Steve Ryman, our engineer, for getting us in and out of the program today. We got one more segment now with Paul Gessing, the president of the Rio Grande Foundation. Go to riograndefoundation.org. All kinds of great information, free information. But the Rio Grande Foundation is a nonprofit organization. Paul needs your support. If you go and find the resources helpful, a donation would be helpful to Paul.
And tax deductible.
And you can do that all on your website, right?
Yeah. You can do that on our website as well. And I'll just throw a mention out there. While donations to the Rio Grande Foundation are not public information, and as reaffirmed by the U.S. Supreme Court recently, last week, post-mortem, we will occasionally announce folks that have donated to the Rio Grande Foundation. And recently deceased Donald Rumsfeld was a supporter of the Rio Grande Foundation as well. Of course, it was noted in all of the news stories that he'd passed away in Taos, New Mexico, and he had a long standing family presence and houses and maybe houses, I don't know, maybe at least a house in Taos, New Mexico that was beloved to them, and he was kind enough to be a supporter of the Rio Grande Foundation.
So very nice.
Thanks for mentioning that.
Very nice. What do you mean, Paul, that Senator Heinrich wants our gas appliances?
Well, exactly that, really. It's kind of scary when you really come down to it. I mean, you know, we're talking about politicians, and they, as a group, seem to have infinite ability to find new ways to control your life. But there is a debate going on right now in Washington over a infrastructure bill. And Senator Heinrich is very passionate about putting a lot of money behind the idea of replacing your gas stove, your gas hot water heater, your gas, your heater, your stove, all those
your
things.
Your car
as a part of that, which is a different kind of gas. I acknowledge that. But Martin Heinrich is our senior senator, and he is really leading the charge. The ultimate goal is that, as they've done in 46 American cities across the country, to eliminate, there are 46 cities that are either eliminating for new construction natural gas hookups, or they are moving towards eliminating natural gas from existing home usage. And that's something that, to me, is well beyond the scope of government. I think that goes without saying, but you could read Martin Heinrich's, for example, his proposed resolution that he has forth, the Electrifying America's Future. Now, electrification sounds good. You know, we all want electricity. We wouldn't be having this show right here without electricity. you know, back in the New Deal, electrification meant providing electricity to people who didn't have it. We all support that, and that was done largely successfully. There's still places around our state and even our country that don't have good electricity. But Heinrich is talking about really pushing against any fossil fuel usage in the home. The idea is over the next few decades that we, as a country, will generate all of our electricity from wind and solar. We'll have to generate.
Which, by the way, that technology can't happen right now.
I agree. I mean, you've got batteries too, and all of this is questionable in terms of the environmental impact. I mean, you're mining things. You're covering the country if you do that in these wind and solar technologies, which is really expensive and not necessarily green. Also mining for all of that. You're going to require 40% more electricity than we have now, because if you take your gas stove, electrify your gas water heater, electrify your home heater and your car, all of them suddenly electrical, you're going to create a lot of demand. So estimates are 40% more electricity than we already use. And the costs also will be significant, not just the subsidies, but people who have gas versus electrical heat can tell you that gas is much more efficient, much more comfortable, much cheaper when you get your bill at the end of the month. So it is incredible government overreach. And I know we talked, I think, at the break about the media not covering this. Mm-hmm. This is something that this is New Mexico's top dog. He is the U.S. senator. You know, he's got seniority over Ben Ray Lujan. He is trying to set this policy for our entire country right now. And as I said, 46 cities, there are major cities. Denver even has considered it. They haven't done it. But New York, another one that's considered it. But you know, we're talking Sacramento just passed this out in California. A lot of cities are moving on this trajectory. And it's only a matter of time before it comes here just holistically based on New Mexico's political leanings, let alone if Washington is providing money and or mandates and incentives to get rid of natural gas in your family's home.
This is totally non-scientific, but I'm thinking about some photography that I saw regarding the pollution plume over various large cities in China prior to COVID, and then what they looked like after COVID or during COVID. They were much less because there was a lot less driving and so on and so forth. And comparing that to the pollution across the United States. The United States has much, much less pollution than China. And China has a very large percentage of electric cars running around.
Right.
So I'm thinking to myself, where's all this pollution coming from? Well, it's primarily coming from electric generating stations. And that's the only way they can keep up with the demand of the electricity. So I guess I don't have an opposition to this. What I'd like to see is some data. I'd like to see somebody do some research. When you're going to pull a battery that's 3 feet by 2 feet, filled with lithium and other chemicals, they can't just, you know, you're going to pull that out of your Civic and replace it. Where does that battery go? What did it take to produce it? What's the carbon footprint of the production of that? What does it look like? How to dispose it? Why doesn't anybody ask these questions?
You're right. And what is the U.S. impact with all these policies, not just on our economy, but we can even talk about the purported impact on climate change and global warming, because that's, of course, behind all of this. And I'll point you to a BBC report from May the 7th, so just a few months ago. China emissions exceed all developed nations combined. They are by far the biggest CO2 emitter. I get it. China's trying to bring its economy out of basically the Middle Ages, and I'm saying that they were in the Middle Ages when Mao was in there, you know, we're talking 1960s, to a modern economy. They are not being shy about developing their own economy. Now, China is very much an economic competitor to the United States. They're potentially a, you know, U.S. military threat, that kind of stuff. I'm not going to get into all that, but why are we, which, you know, you're talking of the developed nations, that's the United States, all of Europe, Canada and Australia. That's the definition I've seen. And China's emitting more CO2 than all of them combined. So my plea, among others, would be, why aren't our politicians and political leaders talking about that, acknowledging that, and saying, we will work with China as we work here in the United States on a reduction of CO2 emissions and improvements in pollution. Not, oh, we're going to unilaterally go backwards in our standard of living, rather dramatically, because, you know, what happened in, and I could find stories, I've got stories for you, back in February, I think, when Texas had their big lack of electrical power, people used their stoves. I don't recommend this, but if you've got no electricity and you've got no heat or something, you have a gas stove, though, that what they were using to survive over there in Texas. It can be helpful to have one system in place for a certain technology and then another thing in place for another set of technologies. And, you know, your electricity goes out. Back east, when I grew up, it went out all the time. Here, we have pretty steady electricity. But with all the challenges we face, do you really want to put all your eggs in one basket, especially with renewables and everything? Then you have, of course, the issue with China. And I respect China's desire to bring their people out of poverty, but they have to be responsible as well. And they are bringing new coal-fired power plants online almost every day over in China. And their increases are dwarfing what we are possibly doing here in the United States. We are already cutting our CO2 emissions. We have been for over a decade. I think it's been like 15 years. We saw massive declines during COVID because people weren't commuting. People were living their lives very differently. I suspect that that trend generally will continue in the United States. That's not the way things are happening in China. China is growing, and their CO2 impact and global warming impact is growing massively. And it just boggles my mind that people like Senator Heinrich can and you know, try to unilaterally disarm on this stuff and just devastate our economy and our standard of living.
Paul, when you were in last time, we talked about the new mission that Intel up on the hill mm-hmm. at the entrance to Rio Rancho is putting together about to hire a bunch of people, and that's a major coup for the city of yep. Albuquerque. But I want to ask you about the state of New Mexico, the land availability we have. I think we have people that are employable. Can New Mexico become a job leader in this country if we would just apply ourselves?
We've got a ways to go, but the first step is to change, you know, the political approach to our economy. We have so much in our oil and gas industry is with the end of the Biden moratorium is going to boom for the foreseeable future. I mean, as long as the global economy holds firm, prices are growing higher and higher, and we're seeing that at the pump here in Albuquerque and around the country. That's obviously good for New Mexico's bottom line, not necessarily our bottom line. Production in New Mexico is booming. We are rapidly moving into second place in crude oil production. We're going to get beyond North Dakota very soon here. So there's a lot of money and possibilities flowing into New Mexico, but the political problems, why is our governor keeping people on unemployment, paying them an extra $300 to do so? And then she's taking other stimulus money and giving them $1,000 incentive to get a job. So that's just the tip of the iceberg, as you know. But we need to get out of the way, the politicians out of the way of our prosperity.
Thank you, Paul. Always enjoy talking with you. Have a great vacation, and we'll talk to you at the end of July.
Thanks Jim.
ABQ Connect is presented by Bosky Heating and Cooling, 505-444-7200. Bosky Heating and Cooling, locally grown, locally owned. ABQ Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KLYT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of staff or management at KLYT. If you missed any or part of today's show, the podcast can be found at abqconnect.online.